I'm Michelle Olivier, and you're listening to Hey, I Want Your Job, the podcast that looks at amazing jobs and what it takes to get them. Welcome to Hey, I Want Your Job. And this week I am joined by the fabulous Chris Clements, whose job I do not have, do not want, and would never want either way, but whose job I have certainly hired for and recruited for a great many times in my very long history as a technical recruiter. Chris Clements, what is your job title?
My job title is Automation Architect.
So you build houses because you're an architect?
No, I think it's more of a subset of software architecture.
And talk to me about what software architecture is, because there's so many people who don't know. And this is, I know exactly what it is, but a lot of people don't. They hear the term, they get confused. What does a software architect do, and why would they call it an architect of all?
That's a good question about why they would call it an architect. I think the way that I would describe it is, if you've been around long enough and you've seen enough ways not to do something, that there's a value in that. And ultimately, they want you to help the younger developers learn not to make those mistakes. So there's some aspects of team lead, but I think the architecture itself comes in when there is a problem that the business is trying to solve through the use of technology and through software. It really helps to have someone that has a lot of experience and has seen a lot of different systems to come in and propose a design or review a design that's going to be something that's maintainable in the future, risk mitigations in place, and that can leverage technology that you've got in-house, maybe things that you've built before, make certain that it's compliant with your IT governance. Really just, it's just that person that comes in and designs it or ensures that it is built to the design, but not necessarily a person that's actually in there writing the code. That kind of falls to the team members.
That is a very, very good description of an architect, much better than I would have come up with. So well done. And I think that one of the important things to note is that I complain a lot, and other people do as well, that in especially technology and software development, the natural path of progression for your career leads away from individual contribution and into people management. And just because you're a really great individual contributor does not mean you should be put in charge of people. Now, in your instance, you are also in charge of people because you're very senior at what you do, but it is often that architects are very senior within an organization and have no direct reports. That's actually one of the things I love best about the position, is I feel like it is a true alternative in career progression for people who have no interest in being people managers. Is that something that you, like, that's how I see it as an outsider. Is that something that you see or feel or were cognizant of when you were making those choices in your career? Were you like, yes, get me away from people? Or did it just happen? How did it work?
You've actually touched on a couple of interesting points that I think about a lot. I think firstly, I'll say that what one organization calls an architect isn't necessarily what another organization may call an architect.
Preach.
At the organization that I'm at now, the architect title is probably more analogous to what a senior team lead would be. So I don't necessarily have direct reports, and I'm not in a leadership role on the organization chart. But definitely within a team, the younger folks come to me and ask questions, and I serve as that oversight without technically being the person that you have your one-to-ones and performance review with.
Right.
Now, you talked about, it is rather natural for a developer that comes into the industry and really shows their mastery and their expertise to naturally be promoted and prodded toward leadership. It stands to reason. It's common sense that if you're good at this job, you'll be good at the next job. And I'm sure you've heard of the Peter Principle. And unfortunately for software developers, that's a lot of times what happens. They're pushed toward a leadership role, and ultimately it was their passion for technology and very detail-oriented things. And this might be controversial, but I think that software development often attracts introverts. I guess we'll just say it like that.
No, I think that's absolutely true. Introverts and neurodivergence, both.
Well, yeah. That's where I wanted to go.
Oh, I wanted to sorry.
Say people that present along the spectrum. So that when they get into those positions where they actually do have to relate to a person on a one-to-one basis or have a difficult conversation with someone about their performance or talk to an audience that's not technically minded, it's a struggle for them.
Yeah.
So the thing is, it's super important to know yourself. And when you're presented with that choice of, do I remain an individual contributor or do I want to move into leadership? The natural thing is a lot of folks want to go into leadership, maybe for the prestige, maybe for the pay raises, but ultimately you're going to be unhappy there and you may not perform very well. So it's important to understand what it is that you love about what it is you do. To know oneself is true power.
Wow, true, but very deep for early on in the conversation, but yes, absolutely. And I think that's a really good point because about the fact that every role should have options where you can progress as an individual contributor without needing to move into people management, but they don't. Like if you want to work in human resources, people think that people go to HR because they're good at people. That is a lie. It's a terrible myth. HR people are actually not people at all. We're systems people. The system happens to be human beings. And that's about it. But there isn't, to move up in the hierarchy, you go to HR manager, HR director, head of people and culture, what have you. And each one of those things is very, very people management focused. There's not a path for individual contributor. And that's true in most other disciplines. The exception is this with development. And I do wonder if, to your point, that's because you have such a huge population, like abnormally high population of outstanding contributors that you want to reward, that you want to progress, who are never going to be a good choice as the person to have the hard interpersonal conversation. Either because, as you say, they're introverts or because they're neurodivergent or any one of a thousand things. So I wonder if that foible of technology comes down to that sort of different demographic that winds up gravitating to the field. I know you don't have the answer, but what's your thought?
No, I don't know. I think that you're absolutely correct that organizations struggle with a career path for an individual contributor in a technology area. Because if they can't use you and your experience to lead people, then what are you good for? And do you just get different titles and different pay grades? I know that this organization is you know very cognizant of that. And the folks that are in technology in this organization they're very wanting to have this career path. It's for individual contributors. As for the people that our career field allows us to be rather horizontally mobile, we can take our skill set and transfer it across industries, perhaps more easily than a lot of other folks can. So I think if you just don't feel that you're getting what you want or it's just very easy to move out. So I think I don't know where I'm going with that. Besides the folks I know that have opted for the individual contributor route tend to be the most senior folks and that everyone else either goes somewhere else or falls into leadership.
So as much as you protest being in a leadership position, you are involved in hiring process and a decision maker around team composition for sure, which I also think is an important distinction to make, that people hear individual contributor and they imagine a guy with a keyboard sitting by on his own in the corner, not talking to people and nobody asking his opinion. And in point of fact, that doesn't have to be true in any way. Like you can be doing that at the kind of level you are where you have a say and a seat at a lot of tables. Your just primary function is not leading people or making strategic choices for the organization, which honestly, if you think about it, like it's a genius setup that you have, Chris. Like you get to have a vote, but you don't get stuck with any of the blowback if it goes horribly awry. Like the more I'm thinking about this, the more impressed I am at where you have managed to position yourself, my friend.
Everyone knows that the backup quarterback is the best position to have on the team. So
you still get to call yourself the quarterback, and at the same time, you don't have guys running at your head every Saturday. Is that it?
That's right. You're not the one responsible for the game-winning drive, you know, or the of the team.
I've loved that. I had always heard it's the kicker. Is that what they're called? Is the kicker? I don't know the sport.
Oh, you're the goat. You're the kicker. And
My
not the greatest of all
children were
times.
playing with, they had these balloons they got the other day, and they were knocking them around. And my son went, "We're playing basketball. Quick, let's get our sticks and hit them." And I was like, "We have obviously not taught our children about the sport. They think that basketball involves hitting balls with sticks. Great. Love it. Sure."
Don't worry about it. My 17-year-old calls the amalgamation of all sports balls.
I like that. I may
I
go with that, Chris. That's amazing. When you are on these teams and making decisions about who to bring in, et cetera, within the organization, what I'm always interested to hear, especially from people on technology, what is it you're looking for? Because right now, one of the really in vogue pieces of BS to say, especially on LinkedIn and other social media, is don't hire a skill set, hire a personality. Hire for mindset. And don't get me wrong, I understand like where that started, and where it started is not asinine or stupid, but saying that comment as like a, when you're high, you can teach them Java, but you can't teach them honesty or hard work. And I'm just like, oh, you make my ass twitch. So what do you, as somebody who is in the hiring process, what are you measuring for? Are you measuring for honesty and hard work over actual technical skills, or do you still want your Java programmers to know Java?
Wow, what a poignant question that you ask. We've been interviewing this week, which is why this is fresh in my mind. So my opinion on that has evolved over the course of my career. Although I still tend to be a bit old school, and I really want to know that a person is comfortable in the primary technology that we're asking them to perform. So I like to ask a few technical questions. Now, 15 years ago, when I was a hard ass, I would have asked, how many overrides for an XYZ function are you aware of? These days, I just want them to be familiar with the framework, discuss some of its key features, and then, why it's advantageous. Now, that being said, that's me. I'm a technical guy, and I concern myself with technical details. My personality analysis show that I'm also an advocate and someone that has a lot of empathy. And I can tell you that the organization that I'm in now tends to favor what they call the star type of interview questions over the real hardcore technical questions. And I'm torn as to which I prefer. I'm torn because these are valuable questions. And this is a question where you might ask, describe a time where you had to make a decision that you knew would be unpopular. Or it might be, describe a time where you went above and beyond, or describe a time where you took a risk.
Tell me about a
And
time where you had to lead through influence without having direct control. Absolutely. Yes,
exactly.
I love behavioral questions. They're my jam. So for the technical element, to supplement the fact that you're not going into that level of detail, do you guys use one of the like HackerRank or one of those kind of tools on the market to do a technical assessment, or you just ask three questions and take their word for it? How does that work?
It depends. It varies from team to team, but in general, you'll have some of the more senior leads in the interview, and they've collected a series of questions that they're going to ask. So it's not from any sort of test or anything like that. It's really questions that usually a question that is directly applicable to the work that they'll be doing. And no one's here to trip anyone up in the interview. And if I may just jump back to this star versus technical. If you're putting together a competitive baseball team, you should be interested in the way that a player can throw and run and catch and hit. Maybe it's important how well they conduct themselves in a difficult contract negotiation, but honestly, we're trying to win. As a business, as an organization, we're trying to win. I'd almost rather take a strong technical mind that's maybe not as sociable than someone that does really well on a behavioral type question.
I actually totally agree with you. I am of the opinion that technology is its own thing. And if you are hiring, that's one of the reasons that I really hate the platitudes about hire mindset, not skill set. Because they tend to say, I just need like a good communicator and a strong team player. And my pushback is like, the best coders I have ever known in my life are neither of those things. They're just not. And it depends if you want to have the best coder who's going to write elegant, bug-free code quickly, innovatively, and on time and under budget, right? Like, then you're probably not going to have somebody who is also verbally dynamic and everybody's favorite guy down the pub on Friday night. And that's not bad, but we just need to own that. And I get really frustrated because I feel like technology is an easy one to see this with, but those roles don't need them to be great communicators. They need them to be great listeners and able to ask questions to make sure they know what the hell you want them to do, because we've all worked with the coders who did not ask good questions and then created something that had no bearing on what you were trying to ask them for. But they don't need to, like I said, be verbally adept in any way. And in terms of being a great team player, it's a very individual job some of these guys do. They sit and they really do sit and code, like the picture that people have when you say individual contributor. Who gives a shit, honestly, if they're a team player or not? Like, they do the work that you ask them to do and they do it well. The rest is your problem. That's kind of my two cents on that. And on what you're trying to say. And I feel like we're on the same page, but what are your thoughts?
Obviously, I agree in moderation. We think about these iconic developers that just would not be a great teammate. Like, let's just say Mark Zuckerberg. Mm-hmm. Or in John Carmack's early career, he was very quirky and standoffish. But
Steve Jobs was known to be a total awful person to work with. Elon Musk, I know people in HR at Tesla who are like, dude, we have to keep Elon away from people because they quit because the guy's a dick. But he's a genius.
But here's the rub. If you're going to put up with that type of attitude and that sort of friction on your team, they had better produce like a Mark Zuckerberg or a John Carmack. So while, yes, I agree with you and I do want technically strong, everything in moderation.
I completely agree. And I have to say, I think that people saying to me, I agree with you in moderation, I'm pretty sure that's how the entire world views most of the things that I feel passionately about, Chris. Like, everybody else hears the things that come out of my mouth and like, I agree with her in a moderation to what she said. But yeah, I think you don't want somebody who is actively acerbic on your team. But I think that there's a big difference between that and somebody who's good at articulating a time that they went the extra mile or a time when they had to stand up from pressure from above to do the wrong thing or any of the other kind of banal kind of star questions that we wind up asking them that have absolutely nothing to do with what their life is. And I understand where those questions come from. I understand that, yes, they have to do things in the role, but there is a difference between what they are able to do when they're doing the job and being able to articulate it. And to me, it's kind of like, I always liken it to driving a car, that if I asked you to think about all of the individual pieces of the process that you do when you drive a car, it's completely overwhelming to think about, to talk about. And you have kids that are closer to the new driver age than I do, certainly. So you have been through this more recently, but like that with new drivers, that they're just like, they're so freaked out about, oh, I have to check the mirror. Oh, but I forgot to keep hitting the gas, et cetera, et cetera. Once you've been doing it for a while, there's a certain muscle memory to it. So if you asked even a seasoned driver to talk to you about their driving process, like we do in an interview, creating this totally artificial dynamic, the way that they would wind up talking about it may or may not have anything to do with how they would perform in the role of driving the car. Because that actually speaks more to how good are they as a verbal communicator to obscure and weird questions.
Yes.
Than how good are they at driving a car. And I feel like, especially with technology, that's a big piece of it.
I agree with you. I think those types of questions are definitely perhaps more revealing of your ability to think on your feet and put that into words than the actual situation you're describing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Ultimately, interviews are mostly good at proving how good or bad you are at interviews, not much else, is my personal take on it. Have you used the tools like HackerRank or Code Hacker or any of those?
No. Now, in previous experiences where I've been the candidate and I've had recruiters working for me, then yes, I've had to take a technical exam. Mm-hmm. We have a little technical exam that we use internally. It's well known amongst developer circles, and we will put them through the FizzBuzz exercise.
Okay.
So that's out there on Google. It's a real quick little programming problem. It's not super complicated. We're just interested in seeing how you approach it.
Okay. But so that's so interesting that you use one that's like wildly available. They can plan beforehand. There's not trying to, you can get your buddy that's a great coder to give you the answers before you go in. That's interesting. Because so many people, like when you talk about the tools and stuff that people use these days around computer testing and that sort of thing for interviews, one of the big pieces of pushback clients always have is, yes, how do I know if they cheated? What if it wasn't them? What if it was their friend? And with something, a tool like that, it's very open to those sorts of things. So I find that fascinating, and that's what you guys use. Do you like it? Or can you tell me if you like it, or you're going to get yourself in trouble if you say, no, I think it's dumb? Or
it's certainly better than nothing. Obviously, we don't let them do it remote. They do it here. Or if they're doing it remote, they have a camera on. But I guess they could have a second screen. Again, if we wanted to create a test to trip someone up, we could definitely do that. At this organization, there very much is this attitude that we can train you into the position.
So one of the things that all of my clients are struggling with right now is the fact that I know you've only been in IT for what, like 20, 30 years at this point. So you may not have noticed, but they are mostly men in IT. And most of my clients are working really hard right now to try to change their demographics. And I know you well enough to know that you're not a jerk or an active misogynist in any way. What do you do as a manager? What have you seen and tried, et cetera, around trying to get more women and other voices onto your teams?
That's a difficult question. I think the largest hurdle that I've encountered about getting more diversity on my team and more women on my team is that we just don't have the options. We just don't get their resumes. It's 1 in 5 or 1 in 7. So it's not that, you know, it almost feels as though it's a preferential thing that, yeah, I know that's difficult. We just don't get the resumes.
And I love the fact that you are the second interviewer in IT that I've had this year that I asked the question of, and that's the same answer that the other one gave. And so I think that just shows that this is an issue from a hiring manager perspective, that like ultimately you'd only hire what you get presented with. And so a lot of the onus has to come back to us as recruiters to be less lazy and do more around presenting you with better diversity, I think, in the first place. So I'm not in any way trying to beat you up about that, because I think that's a fair, especially because you work for a really large company, so you don't get to go out and screw it, I'm just going to go find my own candidates and you guys get over it. And you're not in a position to influence which recruiters they use. So I completely hear you. Do you find that when you do get female candidates, do you find that there's a different dynamic feel or energy on the team around, oh my God, we have a woman, let's see how we can find a way to hire her? Or is it kind of like, oh, look, it's another candidate, happens to be female?
I would say that, so my team is extremely young. I would say that all of them, the vast majority of my team, are under 30 years old, and probably about 50% female. So on this team, it doesn't feel any different. I would say 10 years ago, it was a lot different. Before 10 years ago, I think I had one female coworker on our team, but at this organization, the number is always much, much higher. And then interestingly, the majority of my bosses, let me think about this. There are a good number of women that are at the director level here. I've always been impressed by how many there are there. It feels like things are changing, but I'm not certain what the reason for that is. I'm not certain if it's a conscious thing or...
I think that if you have 50% women on your team, that you are so far beyond the curve on that kind of thing, that shows that you guys are doing a lot of things really, really well. That's great.
Yeah, that's my small team of 8 or so, you know, as part of a large organization, I'm not certain.
Again, I work with a lot of technology clients, and absolutely none of them have those kind of numbers in their technology teams. So that's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. So you work in petroleum, mm-hmm. and you said that you have, your team is much younger, that a lot of them are not even 30 or in their early 30s. And mm-hmm. one of the things that I hear a lot in social media, et cetera, about this, about those types of industries, the dirty industries, right? So petroleum or mining or any of those things that are seen as not green, is that they are struggling to recruit, especially people, younger folks, because people don't want to work for a dirty industry. Are you seeing that? Does that seem to be real? Do you get asked questions about it or pushback about it in interviews?
I'm aware of one person that we've lost from our team, and that was one of the stated reasons, that they weren't comfortable with the industry they were in over the long term and wanted to do something else. As far as the new folks that we bring in, it's never been stated, but I'm not certain that that's something that you could say in safe company in an organization like this.
That's fair.
You know?
That's fair.
So it's hard to say. I'm not going to say that the folks that the youngsters on the team aren't environmentally aware, but if they are, they're certainly more motivated by making a living, it seems.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
I'm sorry, say again?
No, go ahead. I was going to zig a little bit and say you've got kids who are old enough to have really big opinions. Do they ever say, gosh, Dad, you work for a dirty fracker? Or no, not at all?
No, my children aren't very socially aware. They're aware, but it's certainly not.
Activists, they are not.
No.
I have a nephew who went through a period of having night terrors about global warming. So my family, I think, tends to fall on the opposite end of the extreme spectrum. But I'm sure you're not surprised to hear that my family would be extreme in any regard, really, frankly. So that's really interesting, though, that your kids aren't aware of those things.
There are a good number of Teslas in our parking garage.
That is impressive. I remember a time when working in the petroleum industry meant you better not show up in a Tesla. So that is good to know that those times as well are changing. So speaking of changing times, one of the things that I have seen in the last couple of years that's been really different for me as a recruiter that I'm interested to hear your thoughts on is that all of a sudden I never see resumes. Resumes are, people use that. I guess I see them if they apply directly to the role that I'm recruiting for, because then they upload it into the system and I see it that way. But otherwise, I don't see resumes. I see LinkedIn profiles. And when I talk to hiring managers, they're not super interested in resumes. They're really like, where's their LinkedIn profile? I've had hiring managers who felt like it was a red flag if somebody didn't have a LinkedIn profile. I know that you are not a huge social media fan. So what is your thought and take on that? Do you mostly look at resumes? Do you mostly look at LinkedIn? Do you balance the two? Where are you at?
That's a great question. And one of the really interesting things about your series is hearing where folks fall on this. And it's disconcerting that there isn't a science, that there's an accepted way. And one week you had a guest that was very much about the objective statement. And then in almost maybe the next episode or one or two more, you had one that didn't quite honestly have time to read cover letters. And I know that you're not really a big fan of the objective statement, but so that's interesting. As for me personally, yeah, I like to see a resume. Maybe it's because I'm old school, maybe, but I also do go out and look at LinkedIn because everyone is obligated, well, to create a resume when they want a job. But if you really want to go and see what they're passionate about, that's the things that they're doing when they don't have to. Now, you may say someone's a very careful steward of their online image and they make posts on LinkedIn that make themselves look active in a community or with a technology. And maybe that's true, but I really like to see a LinkedIn profile, especially if they're talking about things that are pertinent to the industry, talking about the new certification they've picked up recently, because it just shows motion and it shows continuity and passion. What's even better is when they contribute to open source projects or they have a GitHub out there. That's fantastic because you can go out there and see the projects that they're interested in and you get a little bit of a feel for the code that they like to write. So I like a resume, but I also like the other things.
I totally agree. Every time I work on the candidate side of the desk with somebody who's in the technology space, I always tell them the first thing you need to do, yes, your LinkedIn support, but so is your GitHub. And if you don't have a GitHub portfolio, you need to get one. Haha. Because that's one of the first things I look for when I'm looking for people. It's one of the first places my sourcers look is on GitHub for talent that's using certain technologies, etc. And they have such good portfolio stuff now on there. Like they've really upped their game in the last couple of years around the stuff you can put up on your GitHub profile. You can have your resume, you can have pieces, not just pieces of code, but you can also talk about like your methodology and that sort of thing around the project. And I think that it's a really invaluable insight if people use it well. So I'm so glad you mentioned that because I think that that's always one of my really big pieces of advice for people as well is go rock the GitHub for real. So are you branded on LinkedIn and talking about the stuff that you do and your latest accomplishments? Are you walking your talk here?
It comes and goes. It comes and goes in waves. Sometimes I'm cagey about what I'm doing on LinkedIn because I have a lot of coworkers that are friends and sometimes it's just best to keep your cards close to your table.
Okay. So you're a man of mystery more than anything else is what I heard.
I'm just not a big fan of, it comes and goes.
I totally feel that. I know, like I said, so many of my candidate clients, one of the things that they really struggle with is they just feel like it's a whole bunch of nunya and putting their personal stuff. Because I'm always like, if you're in technology and you don't want to talk about the project you're working on at work or the fact that you're looking for jobs, you can talk about like your personal projects. If you create, I don't know, custom video. My husband is in this thing where he's making custom video games for our children because apparently that's what the cool nerds are doing. That's what he assures me, Chris. But if you do those kind of projects, you can share that on there. And some of what I hear back from people is, I understand why you're saying that. I also feel like that's my personal life. And if I wanted to put it on blast, I would have already done that. And so I think that you're not alone by any means in recognizing the value, but also just feeling disquieted about doing it yourself. So I do feel you on that front.
There's a fine line between being sincere on LinkedIn about what you're passionate about and curating your image.
So. Absolutely. I am in the incredibly fortunate position that I have no boss to impress but myself, which means I can be 100% like just genuine all the time. As my business partner will tell you, I am always on brand. Always 100% on brand because I don't have to be anything other than me, but I do recognize the privilege that goes along with that because I don't have to worry about what did my boss see and I don't have to worry about anything else. I do always think that if somebody came along and tried to hire me, I'd be like, I mean, really? Have you been to my LinkedIn? Are you sure that's what you want to do right now? And I have a feeling that if I did that, I probably wouldn't hear back after that. So we've talked a little bit about being an architect. One of the questions I get asked from people all the damn time that I get frustrated at not having a great answer for, I'm hoping you can help me with, is people who, for reasons I do not understand, have decided that project management is interesting and sometimes it has a reputation as a sexy career. It, in my experience, is not, but that's how people see it. And they want to know, how do they make the move from being something like a developer or something else into project management space? And I know that that's not technically what your job title is, but I know that you do project management a lot. So what advice would you give them? How would you answer that?
I don't think it would be that difficult actually to make that sort of transition. Back to our discussion earlier where developers tend to get promoted toward a leadership position. One skill that every developer should pick up is, at the very least, to be on top of agile methodologies. I would specifically recommend that every application developer get their Scrum Master certification. And that is going to be a great first step into a project management role, because it's essentially you run the team that is in charge of turning out a software feature or enhancement or even a whole product. So you're going to get exposure to the team dynamic, to creating a work plan, to estimates, and you can do this almost at a light level. You're not asked to go and study for a PMP. It's something that you can probably get certified for in 2 or 3 days. I think becoming a Scrum Master and learning Agile and running a small software project as a team lead, that's an absolutely fantastic way to break into the project management side.
Yeah, that's the advice I give, is if that's what you want to do, have something demonstrable on your resume that says,
yes,
project manager. So I, even if you can't go get, for economic reasons or whatever, go get your Scrum Master right now, you can go and take an Agile class. You can go and take, and if you're not specifically in technology that you want to do your, be a project manager, because I agree, if you want to be a PM in tech, Agile is right now the only game in town and has been for a few years. Everybody pretends that they're an Agile house. Nobody's an Agile house, but everybody pretends. But I think that from a business perspective, and especially some of the folks in like more the production and that sort of thing, I think that Six Sigma still carries a lot of weight in the lean methodologies for sure. Either of those two, it's like, what, $30 to go get a yellow belt in Six Sigma?
Yes.
Go get the damn yellow belt. And it immediately indicates, hey, I gave enough of a shit about this to spend $30 and learn it. But the big thing I always tell people is when they're trying to break in, and I is that, because I am candid about the fact that nobody is really an agile methodology house. There's 5 companies in the whole world. Everybody thinks they're circus freaks, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody else is pretending. But it is the vocabulary that everyone uses. And it is not intuitive vocabulary, right? There's no reason that you would know what a stand-up is or a sprint or any of those things if you, or let alone a scrum or anything else, if you didn't know, you just didn't learn that vocab.
Yes.
What is, so I guess on the methodologies, I always find this really interesting. We're obviously in agreement because you're nodding profusely when I'm saying that there's no such thing as a real agile house. What do you think are the methodologies that are actually used? What do people actually do?
Wow, that's a really good question. I would say that most places do something that is agile. So while they may begin in true agile from the textbook, fresh out of their training, when the rubber meets the road, they find that it's just a little more difficult. I think that agile works in organizations where you have a single product line, where you have a team that's dedicated to a single product line. That's usually not the case in an enterprise IT environment. You usually have team members that are serving on multiple projects at once. The other thing is, it's never really been made clear to me how operations work is done in an agile methodology.
I don't understand either. Like, what the hell does that have to do with anything?
If it's broken right now, you're not going to put the user story in and plan it for a sprint 2 weeks from now or bump it into something. It just doesn't work. Now, what may work is maybe you go to a Kanban board and look at your work in progress as opposed to a sprint. So I do think that Agile is valuable. I do agree that few people are doing it correctly. Yeah, that's where I come down on that.
Are there other things methodologies that you've known or worked with? People will talk about waterfall having a lot of creep in, or like old school, like Rational Rose, or what? Are there other ones that you see?
No, Agile has pretty much moved in and conquered the entire landscape.
Oh yeah, I know. But like
waterfall is a curse word these days.
Believe me, I'm aware. And trying to convince some dude that's been an IT director or a senior PM at the last damn company that uses waterfall for 20 years that nobody gives a shit that waterfall, and in fact, you should probably not have it on your resume in 2021. This is my life, Chris. I think I'm gonna start giving them your number and be like, just talk to Chris. He'll explain. It's fine.
I mean, maybe if you're gonna be a government contractor, maybe there's still something there.
maybe. I just like, really? It's not a thing. I think that's really good advice about having those types of opportunities. How do you, when you're working with folks that want to move into something like project management or away from being a pure dev, what types of opportunities do you give them to help them along that line, to help them as a skill set builder?
Again, the best thing that they can do, if they're working, you know, by themselves, they can run the agile rituals themselves. But if they're working with me, I encourage them to set yourself up a project in whatever tool, Jira or Azure DevOps. Think about the project that you're about to work on, break it down into user stories, break it down into tasks. And even if you're the only person on the team, do those things that would be done in an agile environment. You know, have a 15-minute stand-up at the end of your 2-week sprint. Show what you've done to someone, even if they're not a stakeholder. The best way to, what they say, you kind of dress for the position you want. You fake it till you make it. There's a great quote about don't aspire to be a master, aspire to do what the masters did.
I think that's a great one. I guess I was thinking more in terms of when you're mentoring somebody on one of your teams and they came to you and they're like, Chris, I have a dream. Help me, man. I want to lead teams. I want to be a project manager. After you get done laughing about what a terrible dream that is. I'm kidding. What would you say? Hey, I want to help you. You know what? I can give you these tasks or these responsibilities. What are the easy asks for somebody looking to be able to transition that way? What could they go to their manager, their team lead, their architect on their team, what have you, and be like, hey man, could I do X as a skill set to move that way?
Well, absolutely. You just hand over facilitator for the morning stand-up. They guard the time box. They make certain that people stay on task. They hand them the small things, but it's important that you hand it to them. And it's also super important that you ensure that their supervisor is aware that this is something they're doing and highlight their successes. Our organization is, they're really great about it. If there's something that you want to do, they will put you in a position to do it.
I love that answer. Every Scrum Master I've ever known, like the person said, they can lead the stand-up by all means. You want to do PM? Lead all the stand-ups. That sounds great. Be in charge of stand-ups.
It's the easiest thing to do.
It is, but it always makes me laugh. And after stand-ups, bug reports. You could have all the bug reports.
Well, it also makes them interrupt people. And that's kind of a difficult thing for some people to do. So it's there are some skills there. You're not just trying to push them off some grunt work.
There are some skills there, but those are just, it's always funny that those are the first two things that everybody, I've always heard the first, oh yeah, I really helped him out. Like I gave him all my bug reports. Oh, did you? You're a saint. Saint Chris of the fobbing off the stand-ups. So one of the things that I haven't asked you that I ask everybody is, how do you respond when somebody says, how much do you make?
What I would say is that obviously that varies by geographical location, but if you were to go to Indeed and type in solution architect, I would say that I'm probably a little above what the average is for someone of that job title. So okay. It's pretty easy to get into a ballpark there.
That is very specific and much more specific than most of my guests give. So I like that. Thank you. And I think that is Indeed your preferred like go-to salary benchmarker tool?
That or Glassdoor?
Oh, I always like salary.com. Like I find that Glassdoor is weirdly variable in terms of what they classify things at. I just never really trust them that way. And I haven't used Indeed for it. So that's good to know that that's something that you find helpful. Because I get asked that a lot, is what do I use for salary benchmarking? And my real answer is I talk to candidates all day, every day. So I have people telling me constantly how much they make now and how much they want to make. So I go with that. Cool. Thank you so much. What have I not asked you that I should have asked?
I think the one thing that I kind of wanted to say, and I wanted you to give me an opportunity to say, was that we often think that we are the masters of our destiny. And leading up to tonight's interview, I really began to become introspective about how I got to where I'm at. And as much as we like to think that we've put in the hard work and we've gotten the education and we spent the late nights, I can honestly say that there have been two occasions where I walked into an interview and got a job of my own accord. Every other time, it's been a relationship or someone helping me out or someone that I knew, or maybe a relationship between my recruiter and the person that would ultimately become my boss. So I don't think that we can neglect thinking about the way that others help us along the way. It's not always just us. In fact, it's usually not all just us.
I think that that is great and beautiful and poetic and the perfect note on which to end. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You've been listening to Hey, I Want Your Job. For more information on how you can get your own awesome job, visit ONH Consulting at www.onhconsulting.com. We offer incredible resumes, no-nonsense career advice, and real-world tips for landing a job in today's market. Check us out on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and Insta for more insider information. Soon, you'll be hearing us say, I'm Michelle Olivier, and hey, I want your job.